Okay, we're all set. Okay, let's go on to chapter 9. Here we see coming into its own this word guhyatamam, this most confidential knowledge. And again, these words jnana vijnana sahitam. We saw that in the last time where jnana vijnana was phenomenal and numinous. But here, knowledge and realization. In other words, when Prabhupada says vijnana or realization means something that is ascertained by not material experience but spiritual experience, direct perception. So I'm going to give you this, which is a confidential, guhya. Guhya means hidden or secret or confidential. Not everyone will appreciate it. If I have my wallet, I have pictures of my wife and children. Some people do that, and also they'll go up to complete strangers in a train or a bar and start showing them pictures. They don't know your wife or children. They don't appreciate it because it's confidential. You show it to other relatives and friends, everyone's happy to see it. But if they're complete strangers, you're not interested. So it's confidential. So this is confidential knowledge. And this knowledge, you'll know this, you'll be relieved of the suffering of material existence. And then this again, it's quite a fanfare here, is Raja Vidya. It's the king of knowledge, Raja Guhyam, again the king of secrets. Pavitram, idam uttamam, pavitram means it's pure, purifying. It's uttamam, transcendental. Pradyaksha, avagamam, dharmam. It's understood by pratyaksha. Pratyaksha means right in front of the eyes, direct experience. Pratyaksha is rejected as a material, as a form of knowledge. Valid form of knowledge means material sense experience. But this pratyaksha is different. It's the direct experience of those who have purified spiritual vision. The Prabhupada calls this direct perception of the self by realization. Pratyaksha, right in front of the eyes. And susukam kartam is a nice phrase. Joyfully performed. Kartam means to do. Suka means happy. And su means really happy. In other words, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. So this is not what one poet called blear-eyed wisdom by midnight oil. It's blossoming or dancing, huh? So having extolled in this way, endorsed the knowledge he's going to impart to Arjuna, And he calls this this dharmyam. It's the principle of religion, the essence of religion. But then the next verse, those who are not faithful concerning this dharma, ashradadana purusha, those people who have no confidence or faith in this, this dharma, aprapyamam, they do not get me. Aprapyamam, they do not attain me. If they don't attain me, what happens? Nivartante, they turn back or come back. They return. Mrityu samsara vatmani, on the path of mrityu samsara, a treadmill of birth and death. And then from 4 to 10, again we get something we've seen already in the 7th chapter, which is again a description of Krishna in relationship to his energies. All beings are in me, but I am not in them, and so on. We saw this. So he explains this nature of his. And it talks about how he's the beginning and the end, the pralaya and the creation and the end, and how Krishna is detached and aloof from all of this, and so on. So again, Krishna's position is there explained in these verses 4 to 10. And that therefore he's not under the control of the material nature. Then again we return to mudhas, mentioned in the 7th chapter. Now again, avajanatima mudha manushim tanum ashritam. Fools deride me when I ashritam, means when I take the shelter of a human form. That is, like I appear as though I'm in this world. They do not know my param bhavam, my supreme nature, and my bhuta maheshwaram, my sovereignty over all that there is. Long purport to there. Those people, again, now we go back to people. This is a heavy verse concerning those people who are. Fools, mogasha, their hopes are destroyed. Huh? This is 12. Mogasha, moga karmana, their fruitive reactions are destroyed. They're defeated in their hopes. They're defeated in their material activities. Moga jnana, and they're defeated in their knowledge. This is like really brutal. Vichetasaha, these bewildered people. Rakshasham asuram chaiva, and prakritim mohinam shuta. Attracted by these rakshasic and demonic position. So this is Pakatim Mohinim Shrita, bewildered in, under the shelter of the bewildering material nature. So that's one group of people, is what happens. Then, in text 13, we turn, 13 and 14, we talk to those people who know Krishna. You see, the Mahatmanas, the Mahatmas, Mahatma Mahatmas Adurlabha, so here they come back again, who have surrendered to Krishna. See, there was this one group, Prakritim Mohinam Shrita, and here, Daivam Prakritim Ashrita, they have taken shelter of the Daivi Prakriti. Others have taken shelter of the material Prakriti and are bewildered. These have taken shelter of the or under the shelter of the divine nature. They worship Krishna with ananya manasaha, undivided mind, undistracted mind. They don't, not thinking of anything else. Huh? Because they know Krishna as the origin of all creation, inexhaustible. And now we see that these Mahatmas are further described. Satatam kintayantomam yantatascha diddhavritaha namasyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasite. This is a kind of this discussion when it in the 10, 8, and 9, this kind of behavior of the great souls will be further amplified. They are glorifying Krishna perpetually. They carry on their activities with dridhavrataha, this fixed vow or firm determination that was mentioned toward the end of the 7th chapter. Namasyantascha mam bhaktyam, they offer obeisances and perpetually engage worshipping me in devotional service. Huh? This is the Mahatma. Others, and Prabhupada says that here he's thinking of others who are not such Mahatmas. Others, and there are others who worship Yajantamam Upasate, who take shelter of me through the sacrifice of knowledge, Jnana Yajnena. Through the sacrifice of knowledge. And then ekatvena prittakvena bahudha vishvato mukham. In that worship, in oneness, in duality, or in diversity, and the universal form. Prabhupada explains, when they say oneness, they worship me as one without a second. That means they worship themselves as God. Hangrano upasana. One worships oneself as God. You can, there's a formal meditation where you can worship yourself as divine. Hangrano upasana, it's called. Ahang. Diverse in many, you worship anything as God. And Vishvatatam, you worship the, he says, the universal form, or Prabhupada says, the cosmic organism. In many, those are the three types. Are they okay? Well, the next verse, Krishna says, I am, and again, here we have another sort of catalog. When people are performing other things, or engaging in the activities of sacrifice, I am the kratu, I am the sacrifice, I am the ritual, I am the swadha, I am the oshada, I am the mantra, I am the ajam, the clarified butter, I am the fire, I am the offering. Okay, so when there's a sacrifice, 424, how all creating transcendence is situated in sacrifice. Everything becomes one in Brahman. So you can recollect that one. So this is describing a Jyotishtoma sacrifice, according to Prabhupada. And so again, Krishna's present there. He's already described how he's present in everything, but especially where he becomes manifest. If you really understand sacrifice and what's going on, you'll worship Krishna. I am the father of this universe and the mother, the support, the pitamaha, the grandfather. I am the object of knowledge, I am the syllable Om, I am the three Vedas. So everywhere, again, this catalog continues, I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. Suhrit. Suhrit means a well-wishing friend. Suhridam sarvabhutanam. Someone like an uncle or some older person who bestows mercy and favors is called a Suhrit. I am the creation, Prabhavaha, Pralaya, and the resting place, and the Bijam Avyayam, the eternal seed. I give heat, I withhold and send forth rain. I am Amrita and I am Mrityu. I am both immortality and also death. And both sat and sasat, spirit and matter, are in me. So here with this catalog, he's describing that all these different concerns, the thing that people worship or the rituals they observe, are again sort of indirect or oblique manifestations of Krishna. Now, after this kind of catalog here, he then in text 20 goes to those who actually very, very explicitly, you notice the meter changes. Those who study the Vedas and drink the soma juice, seeking the heavenly planets, worship me indirectly. Purified of sinful reaction, they take birth on the Pliyats, heavenly planets of Indra, where they enjoy Deva Bhogan, the sense gratification of the gods. The word indirectly, as far as I can see, doesn't actually occur in the Sanskrit. Prabhupada's put it in here because that's the intent. As we shall see, he's saying they're worshiping me. They don't know they're worshiping me. But nevertheless, because they are following the Vedas, there's something there. They're pious. Surindra Loka, they go to the heavens of the gods. And they enjoy the pleasure of the gods in the heavenly planet. But then he says, when they have thus enjoyed vast heavenly sense pleasure, and the result of their pious activities are exhausted, they return to this Marcha Loka again. They come back down. Thus, those who seek sense enjoyment by adhering to the principles of the three Vedas, attain only repeated birth and death. They're kama kama, and they get the agatam, death and birth. So here's a description, again, of people who are practicing a certain form of dharma that's given in the Vedas. So therefore, there's some connection with Krishna, but still they don't understand it fully. They don't know the meaning of sacrifice, really, and they're seeking this Deva Bhogan. They get it, but it goes away. They come back down again.
Prabhu, here he mentions only three Vedas.
Yeah.
Why not four?
Because the fourth Veda doesn't really concern with sacrifice. Sama, Rik, and Yajur Veda all sacrifice. The Atharva Veda is mostly spells and things like that, local magic. And So those who perform sacrifices, the three Vedas. Yatharva, the fourth Veda is a little different. Okay. And then, so here they're seeking, in the context now, they're seeking a happy material life. And here in text 22, Ananyas Chintayanto Mam Yejana Pariupashyate. Those who properly worship me with undeviated devotion, having no other, concentrating with no other object on me, properly worshiping me in this way, they become fixed in devotion. To them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. There's this interesting word here, yoga shema. Now that's a particular compound which I looked up in the Sanskrit dictionary. Yoga shema. Shema means security or rest. Yoga means linking, and so it also means things that you acquire. Well, you could say the yoga business is yoga. Because business, another meaning of yoga is business. The acquisition of things. So yoga kshema, according to Mona Williams, is the security or secure possession of what has been acquired. The keeping safe of property, welfare, prosperity, substance, and livelihood. So it's generally explained as a dwandva compound. That means two words joined by and. Meaning acquisition and preservation of property. So the yoga is the acquisition part and the shema is the preservation of property. So therefore when Prabhupada says, I carry what they lack, I preserve what they have, I help them in their acquisition, and I make secure what they have. Whatever you need, he provides. Because he says, aham. Yoga, shema, vahami, aham. Prabhupada says in the purport, he gives us a very spiritual understanding in the purport. Yoga, a devotee approaches the Lord without difficulty by this undeviating Krishna consciousness. One who is unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day, being engaged in devotional service, and so on. He lists them. That's yoga. Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches the Lord without difficulty. That's the acquiring. But here what you're acquiring is Krishna. So he helps in the acquisition. This is called yoga. By the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to the material condition of life. That's kshema. You go to Krishna and you're secure in Krishna. You don't come back down again like these other people who go up to the Deva Bhogan and have a good time there, but then their bank account of pious activity is exhausted and they have to come back to tobacco or some other Marchaloka place. Shema refers to the merciful protection of the Lord. The Lord helps the devotee to achieve Krishna consciousness by yoga. And when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down to a miserable conditioned life. So Prabhupada gives it here this very spiritual readings. But I've mentioned before, I've seen where Prabhupada discusses this verse in conversation or lectures. And he also uses it to test the fact that the devotee doesn't have to worry about material necessities. They're also supplied by Krishna. But the thing is, whatever one needs for the purpose of devotional service, including the maintenance of the body, Krishna will provide. That confidence has to be there. So in context, this is contrasted with the followers of the three Vedas who go up and down, up and down, up and down. And so they don't have Yogashema. But the devotee who's different, worshipping Krishna, doesn't undergo those. Then again, those who worship other gods, so again what we talked about in the seventh chapter, the worshippers of Anya Devata, Bhakta, they worship them with faith. They actually worship only me, but their worship is avidhi, purva. It is not according to vidhi. It's improper. So in a sense, when you worship a devata, because the devatas are agents or limbs of Krishna, you are worshipping Krishna. Therefore, there's some benefit to you in this. But it's avidhi purvakam. It's not properly done. In a lecture, Prabhupada gives this example, that it's a scriptural injunction that one should touch the body or the person of the spiritual master. One goes to the spiritual master and touches on his head, that's avidhi. Purvakam. One's supposed to touch his lotus feet, not his head. So you may have said, I touched the person of the spiritual master, but that's avidhi purvakam. That's the example Prabhupada used. So similar to for the demigods, they're not in order. So then Krishna says, I am the only enjoyer and master of all sacrifices. Those who do not recognize my true transcendental nature will fall down. He's mentioned this several times in this chapter now. From the third verse on, he'd been calling to the fact that people who will come back down again by not taking shelter of Krishna. And then, the same theme in the those who worship the devatas, the same theme is in the seventh chapter, go to the devatas. Those who worship the pitris, that's where they go. Those who worship the ghosts and spirits, they achieve them. They go to them, but my devotee comes to me. So all paths do not lead to the same place. So from 26 to 29, Krishna describes now how the worship of him is really not difficult. Again, you know, if you want to perform a sacrifice, oh man, it's a big job. It's so elaborate. It requires so much to be done. I was there when we had these fellows install Krishna Balaram and the other deities in the Krishna Balaram temple. It was a 3-day project. Sacrificial pits all over the place, and this thing and that thing and this thing and that thing. It was really quite a production. Well, the reason we did that is so that the local people would accept that the deities were properly installed. It was a whole thing because Prabhupada realized that we would have to do this. So he got the Vaishnava Brahmanas who knew all the technology and they were negotiating. The first group that came to negotiate with them, we thought we had a deal. They would come and install the deities. Then we invited them, Prabhupada invited them to take prasadam with us. They refused. And Prabhupada saw that, and he said, then they can't install the deities. Because he said that this means, because they won't eat with us, it means that later on they will claim that we're not fit to worship the deities, and they're going to use it to try to install themselves as the real pujaris of the deities. We got another group, and they would take prasadam with us, our prasadam, so that was fine. But it was a three-day process that was going on and on and on. Pradyumna was really interested. Prabhupada's Sanskrit secretary, Prabhupada used to call him an American smarta, because he liked all this stuff so much. I took movies of it, and 8mm movies of the thing too. But at the same time, Prabhupada had a 24-hour kirtan going on for those 3 days, Akhanda kirtan. And he told us that it's actually the kirtan which is installing the deities. So really, you see, it can be very simple. All the elaborate this, that, and oh, what are we going to do? We can't find kusha grass. We can't find this, we can't find that. This is missing. So anyone offers me with love and devotion leaf, a flower, fruit, water, I will accept it. Simple things, generally available in some form or another. And then he gives this principle of sacrifice: whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer or give away, whatever austerities you perform, do that as an offering to me. In this way, you shall be finished from bondage of work. Notice how this summarizes a whole lot of the second chapter and the third chapter, the fourth. The bondage of work and its inauspicious and inauspicious results. But if you look back at those chapters, the second and third chapter, you'll see how really clear and direct this statement this is. With your mind fixed to me in this principle of renunciation, you'll be liberated and you'll come to me. And then here's something that now we come into a very interesting part in chapter 9, and which really gets emphasized in chapter 10 and chapter 11. We've been seeing all along how the sovereignty, the majesty of Krishna, the power of Krishna, how we have to appreciate and understand him as the Lord of everything, how he's transcendent, but also how he's imminent and perceivable by us, even in the taste of water or the... I know once what Prabhupada says, I am the light of the sun and the moon, Krishna says. Prabhupada said, somebody asked Prabhupada to have seen Krishna. Prabhupada said, yes, and so have you. Have you seen the sun? Have you seen the moon? Well, they really haven't. Really seen them. So how Krishna is available to us. But also now when it comes to the devotee, how at the same time intermixed between Krishna's descriptions of the devotee who recognizes his true position of Param Brahma, the Supreme Brahman, at the same time we see that Krishna's intimate dealings with the devotee. This is another form of accessibility, and is a really sweet form of accessibility. He makes himself accessible to his devotees. And this starts to be the real meaning of the secret. this accessibility, because it doesn't seem possible, because that's what Krishna is showing all the time. It's there in the four essential verses, and it starts here, where Krishna first says, on this position, as the Lord of everything, the Maheshwara, and so on, I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone, I am equal to all. See, this is that very aloof position of total neutrality, sort of just looking down on everything. But whoever renders service to me in devotion as a friend is in me, and I am a friend in him. This looks like a complete contradiction. Prabhupada says, no, it's not a contradiction, it's natural. But here you see just two contrasting aspects of Krishna. Aloof, detached, watching everybody going on this material world under the control of material nature and so on. And he's been describing like that. But now the devotee who's going to leave fruit, flower, and water, very different. And then he describes his mercy to the devotee, even if that person happens to commit something really bad. Su durachara. Achara means behavior, du means bad behavior, and su means really bad behavior. He does something most abominable, he says, but yet engaged in devotional service. Then he says, Sadhar Eva Mantavya. He's to be considered sadhu because properly situated in his determination. That the goal is not to do something abominable. The goal is not to gain something from Krishna. The goal is just to serve Krishna. But somehow one becomes derailed. Krishna doesn't take it into account. As far as Krishna is concerned, he's sadhu. He's sadhu. And because it's situated in this determination, very soon he becomes dharmatma and attains shasvat shantin, lasting peace. And then tells Arjuna that you declare it, that you say it, that my devotee pranashati never meets with any destruction. Prabhupada explains here, no, he doesn't explain here, he explains elsewhere why Krishna asks Arjuna to say it rather than saying it himself. Because Krishna sometimes doesn't tell the truth. He had occasion, if you read in the Mahabharata, to be a little tricky. And so he would not always tell the truth. So you may think, well, here Krishna is saying, my devotee never perishes, but you know, he sometimes was a little loose with the truth, so how can you believe this? So therefore he tells Arjuna, you say it, because while Krishna may not always keep his own promise, he'll make sure that whatever promise a devotee makes is kept, so it's more secure this way than Prabhupada says like this in a lecture. And so then going on talking now about this one aspect of his mercy, that the steadfast devotee, even though may get thrown off the course for some reason or another, these strict and determination gets back on the path and proceeds nicely, and so Krishna is his guarantee. This is, if you can think of the Yoga Shema again, how even if he has a mishap, Krishna pulls him up. But we are warned, do not take advantage of this. It can become the seventh offense, sinning on the strength of chanting the holy name. If one, Prabhupada says, if one should not employ the holy name in the service of one's sinister purposes. Now, then another aspect of his mercy is that it is now given to people who were previously considered or traditionally considered not really qualified for transcendental life. These people I mentioned here, women, the business community, and the workers, they can attain the supreme destination. Whoever takes shelter me, even if they're considered Papa Yoni, that in other words, one has taken a birth that due to one's sinful activities, that makes one less qualified or in a difficult position for spiritual life, traditionally, at this point it doesn't matter. This is actually, although sometimes this is, I don't know, people complain that it's anti-women, but nobody ever mentions it's anti-businessmen. which is all of America. Prabhupada said about our country, you know, can see everyone is a shudra and there are a few vaishyas, so that pretty well takes care of that. Anyway, this actually is a very liberal in context of giving this spiritual enfranchisement to people who were previously considered not disqualified because of a position in the material world, and then encouraging here so how much more the brahmanas, the saintly kings. Therefore, having come to this temporary material world, he's addressing Arjuna directly, engage in loving service to me. And then the concluding verse of this chapter, manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyayi mam namaskaru mam evaishasi yut vaivam atmanam mat parayanaha. So, engage your manmana, engage your mind in thinking of me. Bhava mad bhakto, become my devotee. Madhyayi, worship me. Mam naraskaru, offer obeisance to me. And this way, you will be completely absorbed in me. Surely you will come to me. Now, of course, this verse, is almost virtually repeated with a significant change in the 18th chapter. I just want to direct your attention. If you go look at 1865, saying manmana bhavama bhakto madhyayi mam namaskaru mam evaishasi, and then it changes satyam te patijani priyosi me. This time, this one he says, being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. This one says, I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. So here, it's the 18th chapter, it's become more intimate. And also, Krishna begins to announce this topic in the 18th chapter, and text 64, Sarva Guyatamam Buya, there's the Guyatamam, here's the confidential knowledge, which again he calls Paramam Vachaha. We've already seen these words, Paramam Vachaha and Guyatamam. So here in the 18th chapter, and then he leads up to Sarva Dharman Puritja Ja Mame Kam Saranam Naja Aham Tam Sarva Papa Vyo Mokshi Shami Masa Jaha, which is considered to be the kind of the climax verse of the Bhagavad Gita. So these things are taken up in this last chapter, and again this supreme instruction, this most secret knowledge, and it repeats many of these words from the ninth chapter, but actually He stresses now the intimacy, and then completely throws away everything. Sarvadharman prajaja, just give it all and just take complete shelter of me. If you happen to think that, well, you can, there's two things. There's two possible understandings, they're both true. Aham tam sarva papebhyo mukshishami, I shall deliver you from all sins. So either you may think, I'm too sinful to do this. Krishna says, nope. Or you may think in the course of doing this, I may commit a sin. Because after all, sarva dharma prajaja, that sounds pretty heavy. If I throw away dharma, I may commit a sin. Say, I'm going to surrender to Krishna, and my parents tell me, no, it's a sin to disobey my parents. Maybe I shouldn't do it. Honor thy father and mother, right? Nope. So in the course of surrendering to Krishna, you may commit a sin. Don't worry about it. Masujaha, don't be in any anxiety whatsoever. Okay, any questions? On the ninth chapter.
Yes, Prabhu. I had one question regarding that here with in text number 30, when Krishna was talking about the appreciation of Lakshmi.
Uh-huh.
And in our second line, he uses the word Samyak Devasti to himself. Does it like a mean that if a person had acted in a great devotion in the past, but at this present moment he's struggling, you know, being the path that he was on, but despite of his death, he should be considered saintly, or if he lives, he is not saintly, be able to get into the path of saint, he should be respected?
He said because completely situated in his determination is, he has no intention to commit a sinful activity, he's not performing devotional service for anything else. His goal is that he simply wants to become a devotee of Krishna. That's his determination. He doesn't say anything else that I want to be. He's clear about what the goal is. It doesn't become confused. And he doesn't make an excuse. Well, yeah, I may have fallen down, but you know, what about all these sannyasis? Who knows what they're really doing? You know, that kind of doesn't get into this sort of thing. Where I make an excuse, I find fault with others, I lower the standards of Krishna consciousness, all those kinds of evasions. No, I my determination is very clear. I understand what the goal is, that I surrender to Krishna. If I have some fall down, I regret it. I beg for forgiveness, and I again engage in Krishna service. That's to be situated in determination.
Basically, leaving a post of what you left and getting back to that again is sadhu reva samantar.
Yeah.
Not that he, in that fall down stage, he's still acting as, you know, following the rules. I'm not following the rules.
No, he's not. This person is not a pretender. This person is not a hypocrite. This person is one who understands what's supposed to be done. There's these verses from the 11th canto where the beginning of pure devotional service are described. Krishna says he's talking to Uddhava, he says that how does it begin? I have to look it up. Huh?
Person who looks at all living entities with understanding that I am present with thee?
No. I'm talking about the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam, 11th canto. Wow, man, my computer shut itself off. I must have ran the battery out. If somebody has a...
Mother Rukmini does have a Bhagavatam.
Is this what you're talking about? I think this might be what you're referring to. This 11th canto.
Yeah, but it's not the one. Just a second. I'll tell you where it is. Prabhupada actually uses this 11th canto verse in the third chapter. It's 11, 20, 27, and 28. Krishna tells Uddhava that my devotee who is one who Jatasrada Makatasu, that person has faith in my narration of my glories. Jatasrada Makatasu Nivinasarva Karmasu, and is disgusted with all material activities. Veda Dukat Makan Kama, he knows that all sense gratification leads to misery. Yet is Anishwara, still he cannot sometimes control himself. Therefore, even though he has faith in the process, is convinced, disgusted with material activities, knows that sense gratification, the essence, the soul of all sense gratification, of all kama, is dukkha. Still cannot control, always control the senses. What should he do? Krishna says, my devotee should remain happy. He uses the word, he should remain cheerful. That means don't become depressed, overly depressed, or morose, but instead should go on worshipping me with, I think the Dhrita Vrata is used there, with his steady determination. I should repent of such activities because of the conviction, and this way he will come to me. But Prabhupada uses this verse in 331. That verse says in the Bhagavad Gita, those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teachings faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruitive activities. So Prabhupada says this: an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of karma. Now here's where he summarizes these verses from the 11th canto. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord. But because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. This is what it means, fixing his determination. Not resentful of the principle. What? That I have to follow the orders of God. Why can't Krishna, if he's God, so arrange it that I can be both Krishna conscious and enjoy my senses at the same time? Why does he say I have to give up this or give up that? See, that's I'm resentful of the principle. Why is God torturing us? You know, it seems to be about what, 83% of the Catholic Church seems to think. what the survey seemed to think. No, the one is not resentful of the principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness. This is having faith in the injunctions of the Lord and this one. Well, that's what it means to be situated correctly in one's determination.
What are those verses again?
Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 20, verses 27 and 28. And somehow or other, I did something in my computer. It ran out of gas, or I don't know. It seemed like it had plenty of time, but it won't go on now. I hope I didn't destroy it.
The verses that you just read?
I just read the ones I quoted, what I could remember. The beginning lines, that's from the 11th canto, 20, 27, and 28. But Prabhupada, without saying so, really gives us a summary of this verse in the purport to 331. If you know the verse, you can recognize. Prabhupada thinks in verses. And if you recognize it, start to learn verses, a lot of verses, you'll recognize it. So this one's very clear. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness and so on. One may not fully follow the injunctions of the Lord.
And text 932, it says, those who take shelter in me, so I assume this is referring to the devotees. The devotees take shelter of Krishna. But in the following verse, text 33, it mentions the devotees separately again. So I was wondering why the distinction between...
Let's see. 930 and...
Those who take shelter in me. I thought this referred to devotees, but then the devotees are mentioned in 33. And that's what they speak of the righteous brahmanas, the devotees, and the saints, the king. So I was just wondering about the distinction there.
I don't know why he mentions devotees as separate. I never noticed that before. I'm not sure. I'll have to look at some more commentaries or something. Not sure.
Is it a different class then? Because these are the low... First, women,
vicious. No, bhaktas are not a class. This is intricate because it's all in the plural. Brahmana punyaha, the Brahmins, the righteous, the devotees, or you could say we're the punya bhakta, whether it's an adjective or a noun, I'm not sure by this. I don't know. I don't know. But my sense of it is there are some who come to devotional service from some non-devotee position, and some are kind of long-established devotees. That's all. That's all I have to pick up. Or more advanced devotees or something like that.
He's taking shelter from here in 9:32. Another joke from pointed at another thinking that when he says those who take shelter in me, it is in devotion service, not taking shelter in them indirectly through the material energy of something. Like somebody says, oh, you know what, let's have a party or something and we'll enjoy ourselves. They're taking shelter, but through the material energy. So here it means through devotional service?
Yeah, Vyapasra is particularly taking shelter. Ashrita, vyapasrita, yeah, it means they really particularly come to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the first line of purport, devotional service.
Yeah, I just think that there may be people who are born in devotee families who start off on that level. And others who are chandalas and all kinds of other things, they still... And Bhagavatam is even more radical. How glorious is that dog eater? And he said that person, Savanaya Kalpate, that person, verse before that, is qualified to perform the soma sacrifice, even though he's a dog cooker or a dog eater. So that means all the if you want in one of these positions, it's presumed that there's been some bad karma, and so this these verses are quoted and to say that devotional service erases all this. These miseries that come from bad karma. Okay? That's it? Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada. Ki. Yeah.